Welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. This week, we catch up with Alicia Carrick of Big Chick Energy. We sit down and we talk about Deborah Kimmett's Downward Facing Broad. Stay tuned and enjoy the show. Everyone, thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Matt Dill. This week, I am joined by my friend, Alicia Carrick. She is a member of the sketch comedy troupe, Big Chick Energy. You may have seen them in Toronto. You may have seen them in Newfoundland. You'll in a few weeks' time, you're going to get a chance to see them in Hamilton. We had an awesome time catching up, talking about comedy, and in specific, talking about Deborah Kimmett's album, Downward Facing Broad. Deborah is a Canadian comedian. She is based out of Toronto. You may have seen her performing on stages in the city or across the country. She's appeared on The Debaters 26 times, is a regular at the Winnipeg Comedy Festival, and has been on CBC Radio 1's Definitely Not the Opera. She is incredibly funny. So if you haven't already listened to it, check out her album. Now, before we get this interview started, it's been a while since I talked to Alicia. My brain for a long time was really foggy. I had trouble just focusing. As you know, I have been doing mind magic for like a bunch of weeks now, the mental performance shot. And it's been great for getting my brain ready and active and clear to go in all of these interviews. It's 100% of my vitamin C and D per shot. Do it once in the morning. And it just is a kickstart to my heart, as they say. Now, it's not being a coffee replacement. I've never really done a lot of coffee. First time I had coffee recently, it did not end well. It was just a mess. But it has been a good aid in getting me going and getting me started for the day with a lot less stress, just very chill. It's doctor validated, created by an advisory board of medical researchers. It was in development for over a decade, hundreds of iterations, and what we get is the magic of mind magic. So with that said, I'm going to put that mind magic to use. Check out the link in the description. And thanks for listening to Comedy Album Book Club.
No, you can't sit on a couch now. No, you have to keep going. The only time you're allowed to sit in a couch is if you're at a mindfulness meditation retreat. And not that I'm ever going to be a grandmother, I know that, because my kids have cats. And I have to say, I'm so much more patient with my grandcats than I was with my own cats. But don't feel sorry for me, don't feel sorry for me. It's fine. At least with grandcats, you never have to go see a school play. My kids have therapy cats that they can pet when they look at their student loan debt. And they rescue everything. My daughter drove 2.5 hours to rescue a squirrel that fell out of a tree. And I said, oh, it couldn't be a very smart squirrel if it fell out of a tree. And they're like, Mom! Because apparently me having any fun at all embarrasses them. Yeah. I raised my children very liberally. You know, I mean, I'm not walking around saying adulting or anything, but, you know, I was like, what are your feelings? Pass the sharing stick. But somehow now I've turned into Archie Bunker. Everything I say shocks them. I was saying, well, the other day I was talking, I met this Italian woman in the coffee. They're like, Mom! Like, you can't say it. You can't identify her race unless it's relevant to the story. And I'm like, well, how do you know it's not relevant? Because you never even let me finish my sentence. Mom, you can't other her. Well, you're othering me. And you're just trying to micromanage this conversation. That's because I have social anxiety. I know. And that's what makes our family funny. So practice it a little more. You can make some cash. Othering. You know what's got other in it? Mother. They're lovely children. They are fantastic, especially if you look at them on their Instagram. They always got their hair in front of their eyes, and they're just like, hashtag vibe, hashtag restoring my heart, hashtag empowerment, hashtag my life is beautiful, hashtag... They're a bit delicate, though. A bit delicate. You know, everyone says, millennials are so entitled. No, they're not. They're not entitled. They work 3 jobs to make the same amount of money I did 30 years ago. They're not entitled. They're adaptive. They have to adapt. And they feel the pressure all the time because they look at the 20-year-olds and they don't have a generation gap anymore. They have a decade gap. They're 30, they see a 20-year-old, they're like, oh, great. Look at those 20-year-olds, they know nothing. Yeah. Kids are faster, right? There's a quickening in the world. There's a what? There's a 15-year-old girl who got nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. There's a 10-year-old virtuoso on a 12-string guitar. And then there's what next? Like a kid going down the birth canal decides to split an atom? They're coming out of the womb with, like, marching little protest signs, right? They're like, we gotta evolve, we gotta evolve, you know? So my kids, and they're like 10 now, 10 is the new 30. And we don't know what to do with them. We don't know how to lead them. Older people don't know how to lead them. Did you see the walkout today, all the schools protesting Ford? And we don't know how to... There's a teacher on the news. Get back here. Okay, like if you're going to go, take your fruit roll-ups. You don't want to be in jail without a fruit roll-up. It's fast, and they have to adapt. And I think that's it. That's why we parented them that way, because evolution is perfect. First off, my parents were bossy. That's because they had a lot of kids and they couldn't afford us to stay around. So there's a boss, get them out, make it miserable for them. Then my kids were democratic and we were like, okay, talk about your feelings. What do you want? What do you feel? And they go, I'm 2. I want to run in front of a car. And we didn't raise kids that are scared of us. We raised peers. Right? And that's great because they don't have any money and I don't have any money, so we're just going to be living in a little tiny house, which is code for trailer park, but we'll be family.
There you go. Welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. This week I am joined by Alicia Carrick. So it's been ages. Like, I was about to say it, and then I was like, let's save this for the podcast. I haven't seen you since Sketchfest, where you and Big Chick Energy killed. So yeah, you've been enjoying. You went did Newfoundland after that together, and like, so how's it been performing?
Oh, it's been so fun. So Sketchfest happened and we were just sort of on this high. Then we applied to the Newfoundland Sketchfest, which was their first Sketchfest ever, which I was sort of like shocked to hear about, but whatever. And we got in, like not really thinking that we would. Mm. And I had just like quit my job like the December before. So I was like running on empty in terms of like bank account.
Yeah.
But then realized I had some credit card points, which was an added bonus because I was like, oh man, if the girls go and I don't go, I'm going to be so sad. And so we got to go and we had a great time.
Excellent.
Like the Newfoundland audiences or the St. John's audience was just tops. And like we go in, yeah, and the host was already like, oh, they're ready for you. Because it was the 9 o'clock like second show. So people were like a little toasty.
Beautiful.
And they were it was in like a rec center that totally brought me back to my like teenage days hanging out at a like a Legion. And it was just like pipe and drape and like lights that I would have in my bedroom around my mirror. And just like it was just low budge, awesome.
That's
and
great.
Vibe and the bartender Winnie, she's just like this older 65-year-old woman who's probably just had a life, and she had a tattoo. It was Roman numerals right on her chest, probably size like 72, and it just said art. I'm like,
oh, they live. Cool. They know how to live there.
So it was a great time. And so then we got to just kind of ride the Sketchfest high, do the Newfoundland thing, and then we were like, okay, let's take a little bit of a breather. And then we have Hamilton Fringe coming up in a couple of weeks.
That's awesome. So yeah. Excellent. Well, you chose Deborah Kemet's Downward Facing Broad. So what inspired you to choose that album?
So it was a little bit of a backstory as to how this came to be. I don't know if your audience or you are likely familiar with the improviser and hilarious person, Adam Colley.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so I had a message from Deb in my Facebook saying, Adam Colley recommended you for some photography. And I was like, that's so kind. Adam and I have only shared words on baseball teams a couple of times, and I didn't even know if he knew I had a camera, so that's so sweet. And so we just kind of like went back and forth, and we were thinking about getting together to do a photo shoot. Unfortunately, it has not transpired yet, but maybe one day, because she's having a banger every year. She put out a book, she was doing a new podcast with a friend of hers, and going to Winnipeg Comedy Festival, as well as putting out or getting a new album together. I don't think it's out yet though. So she was just having a banger of a year, and we had one phone conversation just about being a woman in comedy and also being unemployed at the time. She was just like so inspirational and full of wisdom and just a super, super kind person to a stranger on the other end of the phone. And I had not listened to her stuff. Like I watched a couple videos on YouTube and I was like, this woman cracks me up. And then you asked me to do this. And I was like, you know, who do I love in the Toronto scene? And like some other people came to mind, but then I was like, oh my God, Deb, I gotta just sit down, listen and enjoy. And I did.
Oh, one of the things I really loved about it is, I mean, as far as comedy is concerned, I love watching or listening to comedy from perspectives that are not, you know, my own, you know, like, so I like, you know, Richard Pryor was a big inspiration growing up. Sarah Silverman was one of my favorite comedians in the 90s. So it's like, you know, these different voices, and it's so rare to see not just a woman in comedy, because women in comedy are becoming more, thankfully, more regular and frequent, but an older person in comedy and an older woman in comedy. So, I mean, she's, you know, this is 2019. She was 62 at the time. So she's pushing 70 now. And that's like, that's awesome. There's so much in this where I was like, this is resonating a lot. Kind of so it's like,
we're not even that old, and like,
I turned 50 I turned 50 in a few weeks, so like October, it's like, but I'm not that said, I'm not 62 as she was at the time, but it's just really resonant, and I thought that was great to hear that voice.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking a lot of my mom listening to this. And I just envisioned like her listening and hearing her as like semi-Irish like cackle. Whether she would laugh at it, I hope she would, but I also have this feeling of that she'd be like, oh, all these jokes about old age and rah, rah, rah. She's just like sort of she's 71, 72 years old. I'm like, you would get this.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking she's laughing, and so I can't wait to listen to it with my listen to her with my mom. But God, she just touched on so many parts of getting older, but then, you know, having kids. And I love that she was ripping on her kids.
Yeah.
And then some of the like millennial, like younger speak, like the ghosting bit. There was just so much there. And like, I love the just general loneliness.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's something, especially, you know, getting older and being single, that's a lot of people struggle with. Like, and that was the thing too. It wasn't all, there's a variety of emotions that run through it. I mean, it's all funny, but like some of it was a little down, some of it was a little up. So it's not just like this one layer of like, like the, one of the bits that I really enjoyed was how she talked about millennials, because she is a boomer, or like or early stage Gen X or tail end boomer, and not in a judgment sort of way, in a strictly generational way. And she's very positive, and she's like, yeah, they don't have a lot of fun or time and can't buy a house because they're working three jobs to earn what I made 30 years ago. And it's true. Like it's, you know, and it's nice to hear an older voice, because I mean, I often find even my, you know, I'm mid Gen X and many of my peers are, will crap on millennials. And I'm like, yeah, but I mean, we
it's
didn't have
time.
It easy, but they had it even less easy. So it's like, yeah.
I totally enjoyed how she like shone a bit of a light on how fast things are moving. And it's not necessarily a generational gap. It's a decade gap.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And how there was sort of like a, there's like a spiritual aspect to it too. And in those parts where she would dip and just kind of go into this like super real moment of, like, yeah, this whole, we're busy now, as opposed to when she was, you know, probably our, my age, mid thirties, going like, oh, how you doing? Fine. Fine was the regular thing to say back, but then now it's just busy, and busy this being this badge of honor.
Yeah.
But like this fast paced world is not all it's cracked up to be. And it's so different from a different generations. And it's, I love how she kind of weaved this, you know, pulling herself out, seeing this 360 view of what everyone's going through.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like we, and I mean, I say this as a person with four podcasts, three active podcasts, one in pre-production, and one that I've been talking back and forth about producing for somebody else. And also occasionally getting a stage time. So like we commodify our life. We turn it into like, try to like, how can we make this meaningful and achieve something with every moment of our waking life? So it's, which I don't think is healthy, you know, and I mean, and that's something that I think she calls out in this in a really nice way.
Yeah. And how do, like you just said, how do we make it meaningful? But then when meaning is directly or correlated with money, you know, and it's just, you know, Instagram, TikTok, and trying to be viral is like, what I saw a stat the other day that was like 65% of like 14 to 21 year olds refer to themselves as content creators or identify as content creators.
I
we're literally walking commercials now. So
like and I mean, even I was watching this one video, sort of tangentially off of that, on Instagram and TikTok. And what's happening now is because they've got stores integrated into, like, a buy function integrated into your posts, it's pushing people to basically become salespeople for drop shipping Chinese crap manufacturing companies. Yeah.
Lamp. Let me just click on it.
Exactly. And it's bonkers, and it worries me because, like, I have a niece who's super awesome and creative, but she's really on social media, and, you know, she's cool so far. I just worry about being online that much. Like, I was born in a time and grew up in a time where the internet wasn't a thing in people's homes. Yeah. And it's like, I can't
have Half-Life 2, Matt.
we had a period of time where, you know, we weren't, and I can't imagine growing up in a world where you've been online since you're born, basically.
Oh, and then this goes into the whole conversation of, like, kids have forgotten how to play.
Yeah it's
we're back to Deb.
One of the things I also really love is her ability to paint a picture. Like, she's talking about that Aquafit class and the fight that breaks out because the women, but then she's like mummeration of underarms, and I'm just like, that's a beautiful use of a word that a lot of people won't get, but if you do, because, like, you know what a murmuration is, right? It's when starlings sort of take off in this big sort of flock of thousands of birds and sort of, like, dance in the sky.
Oh, yeah. I think I heard the word, but I didn't know what it meant. Okay.
Yeah. So look it up on YouTube. Look up murmuration. And it's specifically starlings. But it's really wild to look at. And
oh, yeah. Yes. I know exactly what we're talking about. Yes.
Yeah. And, but that is, like, old people, like, arm fat, like, loose arm flesh flapping around. And it's a visual painted so vividly, and it's so funny. It's so hilarious.
So, yes, she is a storyteller. And I also know that Deb offers online writing classes.
Oh.
So, like, after listening to this, like, she does paint a great picture. And, like, so much of me was like, oh, I wish this was like a video special. And maybe it is. I could have looked it up on YouTube. But I just know that she's making wild faces, too.
Yeah.
You can feel that with just her words. And then you hear a laugh, but you don't hear the joke per se, or, like, the extra little bit. And you're just like, oh, she's probably rocking it. And
yeah,
I love the bit where she has that, like, background track playing when she talks about when she goes into her house at 4 o'clock, nobody's there because her kids are grown. She's not with anybody. And she starts talking to herself, and whatever the lonely song comes on.
And the cat grandma bit, I find hilarious because Heather's mom.
Refresh me on that one. What was that one?
The cat grandma, where she's like grandma to her. She's never going to have grandkids. She's just a cat grandma.
Yes.
And that's 100% Heather's mom. She'll come over to visit the boys and bring them treats. One time she's like, oh, I just stopped at the store and bought them some treats. And she bought, like, maybe $50 worth of, like 20 or 30 bags of treats. And it's like, we don't have room for this many treats. Yeah. Why did you? And she's like, well, they were on sale. And I'm like,
damn it.
Like, it was very sweet of you, but we give them this much, they'll be in cat diabetes.
Yeah. Like, they can't do that. To worry about.
Yeah. But it's it's all from a place of realness without even when she goes, like, into the darker area of, like, death. Mm-hmm. It's never depressing, you know. No. Like, I found that, yeah.
She's and just the because the album being called Downward Facing Broad, like, she strikes me as a woman who maybe has a spiritual practice, who has. Well, she mentions reading. She's like, being 60 something, you know, we've already read the books on being in the now.
Yeah.
And, you know, being on the path or whatever the hell. And she sounds like someone who has just, like, embraced that as part of life, as opposed to the scary darkness that will come.
And one of the things, like, there's an incredible variety in mm-hmm. the stuff, because you've got like some very inside baseball, shitty behavior of people in comedy towards women.
Yes.
You've got some political-ish stuff with gun control in the States. And mm-hmm. she closes on that one joke, Kenny's tiny pistol, with like a really solid burn. But just the fact that, and you know, I have, like Heather's family used to go to Florida and they had friends down there and like they had guns in every room, like just hidden in drawers in every room. This is such a different culture. So she has like the, like, you know, she has this real range, and then medical expense to her vibrator.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
In the audience loved that. So, oh, yeah. So it's a journey, you know, it's got some real pace and levels to it.
It sounds like, yeah. And it sounded like a variety of ages in the audience too.
Yeah.
There were some parts where she was, what did she say? I think it was when she mentioned that her body yawned and never came back, and you just hear a, like, that's resonating for sure. Yeah. Very true. But then it's just so much of, and then, oh, the Facebook bit. Like,
why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Yes. Fighting. I laughed so hard when she was talking about the one person who posts a picture of a potato from her garden. And then she comments, isn't that the potato from last year? And then the back and forth that takes place in public on the Facebook comments. And then somebody messaging her saying, that is the same potato.
And it is like that. And isn't the funny, like, and for me, what I found extra funny there, because like there's so many people over the years I just added because they're in comedy and new friends and stuff like that. And it's like, she's like, I've never met you before. I don't know you.
I didn't know you were a comic. I didn't know you were being funny. And then the punchline, so I blocked her. Yes. As you should have, Deb. Like, yes. Oh, God. Yeah. Sorry, but, Ruby's here now. Sorry.
No, no worries.
If you hear any honks of her sheep toy.
Oh. Hey, you know, nothing like a sheep toy to punch up a podcast. So that's good.
Oh, wait till the dog upstairs comes home. You'll hear something.
But closing in on 50, I really appreciate, like, my body is going off the, like,
what
the wheels are coming off the cars.
Days, Matt? What are you feeling?
I'm feeling what she's feeling. It's just like, you know, the yawn and it just never came back. Like, you know, it's like,
there's no body coming in the mail.
Yeah. You don't get a replacement. Like my one finger, it doesn't work anymore. It's stuck like this. I have to go like that. They gave me like this, they call it trigger lock. They gave me an injection and you get any more than 3 injections will cause permanent nerve damage. So the next thing is to cut open my finger and operate on the tendons. And I'm like,
what the
yikes. So like that started happening. I've got tinnitus in my left ear. Just one day I woke up and it's like, so I've got an appointment for that. My foot's weird and my hips are weird. And, you know, the diabetes, your body just starts going off the rails. And the best you can do is to keep it up. But it doesn't, like I said, I stopped maturing at 13. Like the listeners can't see the wall of lightsabers behind me. So that hasn't changed. I still feel young.
Yes. Yes. How old are you in your mind?
I'd say I'm 13, 14, like a teenager, like a teenage kid. not even a cool teenager.
Person. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm just teenage enough that I can say teenager without lying, but not teenager enough to stop playing with my toys.
No.
How about you? How old do you feel inside?
I would say like I'm in my early 20s, maybe. I used to say 18 specifically, but then I was like, no, maybe 21 now.
Yeah.
I don't know if that'll ever change. Like I asked my dad the same question and he's like, 28. just arbitrary. It's like, was it age that, you know, made such a mark? I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I was doing cardio at 21. I'm not now. When it felt decent.
Yeah. Well, you're walking a dog, so that gets you out and moving.
I've recently done a new job, and I'm sitting more, and it sucks.
Oh, yeah. You got to watch out for that. I that's what got me my weight problem. So I went from working in food services to a desk job, and then never recovered.
It's too easy to go to Tim's every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
But it's funny though. Like I was a 40-year-old 13-year-old and I'm a 13-year-old 49-year-old. You know, it's like I was always like serious and like when I was little and like I wanted to be an adult and now it's just like I'm good. Like there's not a lot to want, like nothing that you want at that age.
My mom always tells the story of when I was young because my brother and sister were older than me. And so just the youngest kid, right? The young kid problems. But I would say, when do I get to be the boss? And she'd say, well, this is me under 10. So she said, when you're 10. And I go, really? And she says, yep. Like, what a lie.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Growing up, it was like James and Siobhan, whenever they were just like tormenting me, they'd just be like, don't look at me. And then I'll be the boss. Like, what is the boss? I just get to stay up till 10. Like,
yeah.
Not problems. This is where my parents were probably.
Yeah. kind of in that vein, like she talks about retirement and how it feels like, we'll never retire. Anything like he's
like,
you know,
that's the true concept that we won't, it's like, and she says like, I don't know who I am if I'm not working, but it's like, Ruby, are you humping? Oh, stop. Get out of here. But it's true. Like, I don't know. Like it's, I guess the pandemic was a moment of feeling retired when the world stopped.
Yeah.
And, but she, like doing comedy. I know she's doing the writing thing. I want to just call her back and be like, Deb, like, what other jobs did you have? Were you always doing comedy? Like, just tell me more. And like, yeah. Are you still doing it? What is that full-time job? Like, what does that look like?
And I think that's kind of one of the things that, because I know a lot of young comedians who are very sweet people and work very hard, but they got into comedy at a really young age, mm-hmm. and didn't really ever have a life. And I find that their comedy often leans towards being very surface until they get older and have got more experience. But it's like, it's funny. Like, I remember when we were taking improv together, it was a secret for the special insider fact for the audience.
Yes.
We met doing improv at Second City. And none of you would believe it. Every once in a while, I'd bust out a story like, oh, I DJed here, or I did that, or I worked at the burlesque group. You guys are like, what? When did you do that? I'm like, at the time, I was like, I'm 45 or whatever. And like, yeah. Oh my God. And it's like, yeah, I mean, you have a life, then you have experiences to draw from. And I mean, that's not to say these people who are young don't have experiences to draw from. It's just, if you're all you do is live comedy, that limits your pool.
Totally.
So and having a job and having a life and having experiences beyond that, I think really help do that. And it's like, you know, in the mentor, she's talking about this when she was a young actor coming to Toronto, and there's this older woman who sort of mentored her, and she tells a story about how that she met this man and he kissed her, and then next thing she knows, she's like holding this book that he gave her in the subways
of Britain. Oh my God.
And it's like, oh, this is sweet. This is sweet. Oh my God, this is dark, because it was Hitler.
Yeah. And the book was Mein Kampf.
Yeah. And it's like, whoa, that did not end where I expected to.
No.
But you know, and it speaks to her quality of storytelling and comedy, in that when she gets there, it's really funny because it's like completely unexpected.
Big fan.
But rings of truth, because, you know, something like that could ring very false, but it rings of truth, and it just really works.
Yes. And I appreciate you saying that, because like, as someone that's always kind of wanted to do stand up, and you do it so well, and having like all of the life experience that you do, like makes it right. Like you have a deeper pool.
Yeah, yeah.
You have a lot of material. And as someone that kind of got into comedy, I don't want to say like too late or anything. Like, sure, I'm like, oh, you know, I wish I did this as soon as I got to Toronto, but I didn't. Whatever.
Yeah.
I'm here now. It's fine. But like, I've also been at like this, I'm at a new job, but the job I had before, I had it for 8 years. And that's a long time to do. To be in one environment, sure, I had different jobs within the environment, but like, it wasn't a lot of new stuff happening, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, as someone that I would like to take like a storytelling or stand-up course or a writing course. Like, English was always my favorite subject. My dad was an English teacher for 35 years. And it was a practice that I had in high school and university only, but I enjoyed it. But the writing part, and reflection part, and thinking about your life and drawing from your own experiences is a practice.
Yeah.
And when like bringing up like younger comedians or people that have been only doing comedy, like they're still practicing the craft, but they might not have been in different pools or different environments. Right. And I think about that with myself, being like, I don't know if I have much to write about, like, or to pull from having been in kind of like, and that's just my like career time. Like, I think about it with improv too. You're like, what characters can I think about? Or I'm like, oh, I was sort of in like a same situation where, you know, there are some folks that are like, oh, I'm just going to make a little sideways jump career-wise, and that are plotting and planning and being strategic about their career. And I'm like, good for you. Do I wish I was that person? Maybe. Like, yeah. Do I wish I was naturally like ambitious? A little bit. A little bit. But it's not to say like it's, I don't think it's bad necessarily to just be kind of like seeing where life takes you, or to coast, I feel like has a negative connotation, but I don't mean it that way at all. But like, yeah. It's kind of like, you know, life takes you in ways that you don't know what the joke will be later.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I mean,
writing will be later.
To your credit, like, you are an incredibly talented character actor, kind of creator. Like, every role
you just watched
you
SNL.
Yeah, well, I mean, hell, you could easily be on SNL. Like, the kinds of characters you create and put up on stage. Like, there was a Sketch Fest. You had that one sketch where it was a OBGYN clinic, and you're like a doctor mechanic, and you're sort of up there with Emily and Sam was the patient.
Emily was too. Emily came in as the other mechanic.
Yeah, Emily was coming in and doing that PSA.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you really embodied that character, and you brought a lot to it. And like, every time you guys take the stage, I find that you all are very good at it, and you in particular really bring a lot. So don't sell yourself short.
I know. And thank you for saying that. And shout out Sam. That was a banger of a sketch she wrote.
Yeah.
And but in terms of like sketch and improv is like the safe space, you know?
Yeah.
Like, stand up scares me.
I find
writing. And then I think my daddy issue would be like my dad reviewing an essay.
Yeah.
Like, well, we could really rework this. And I'd be like, no, let me do it. I'm the boss of the essay.
It's funny. It's like, I have a similar but different hierarchy. For me, improv is my safe space because you have a backup, but it's sort of very fluid. I do worry about letting other people down.
Oh, God, same.
So it's kind of my middle neutral space.
Yeah.
But sketch, because it's scripted, I worry that much more because I drop a line, I miss a cue, that screws everybody else up. But stand up, I'm up there on my own. And I think, you know, I've increasingly become looser with my material over the years. Mm-hmm. Like, I would write it down to the beats, but now I'm finding it more organically. Like, I will just have like maybe point form sheets, like set lists, where I'll just go up and sort of find my path between the jokes and not necessarily have it all planned out. And I mean, that doesn't mean that works for everybody or that's how you should do it. Everybody has their own method, but you know, I find it more. Yeah. It's practice. It's, but that said, the only person who I can let down up there is myself.
Yeah.
And the audience to a certain degree, but if I screw up a joke and they still laugh, I'm the only one who knows I screwed up that joke. So I find it more forgiving in a lot of ways, but you are up there on your own. It's a tightrope walk, as opposed to like a relay race that like sketch is.
Oh man.
So yeah,
it is. And well, with sketch, like that's where like the improv training I'm so grateful for. Cause I don't know what show you saw of Sketch Fest, but there was one where I forgot sheet. Were you at that one?
I was the one where the prop was missing, so Emily was running back and forth. That one. Yeah.
And you know, we're out there and it's just like you're out there feeling like naked on stage, but then you're just like, oh, default improv.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's the thing, like so many comedians in stand-up, I find, are kind of snobby about not everyone, and they've got, I think it's, you know, it's certain groups, but are snobby about improv. You know, they're like, that are just like, ugh. And I'm like, but that's what we're doing. You know, like I was having a conversation the other day with Melanie Dolling, and she brought it up. Yeah. She's like, you know, that's all riffing is improv. You know, like, yeah. So it's just embrace it. I mean, yeah, you don't necessarily need to do an entire improv scene every time you're on stage, but just appreciate the skill. You know, it's like pop music and classical music. These are all different genres. And
that's true.
They're all good.
You're right. I love thinking about improv as a genre, or like just music or riffing or jamming. Like it's such a flow state that you can get into. And
yeah.
There's nights where you're on and nights where you're not. And oh man, like just like my last couple of beer comedies, I've been so in my head on like the Saturday nights, or I'm just like, okay, we got to go give her. And then I'm just like, and like, it's sometimes you're there, sometimes you're not. And it's all about like the presence that you can bring to it and the letting go. And like, that's where with like regular Second City classes, like that was so fun. Are you taking any classes right now? I have to ask you.
I gotta go back. I literally work next door to Second City now. My office moved. I'm the building up the street.
Oh,
so
wow.
I like to the point where we had our office summer festivities at Second City. I'm looking at signing up for the long form class.
Good.
There, just to get the experience of long form, because you know the A through E, it's now a completely different thing, and they busted my chops for a little bit, but then they eventually are like, "Oh yeah, you can do it," because okay, I finished the entire program, and like you know, then it was the pandemic, so it's not like they're like, "Oh, it's a different program now, and you have to take it over again." And I'm like, "I'm not taking the same five classes," and
you're
they're eventually like,
"Thousands of dollars out of me, Second City. Relax."
Okay. Yeah.
That's another topic.
Yeah. So they did. I sort of showed them what I'd been doing and that I'd been active. And they're like, okay, sure. Not a problem. You can sign me up for this
intro to
long form. So
Matt Ardell, please. Hello.
I wasn't that much of a prick. And I was like, no, I ran this festival and blah, blah, blah.
But, Matt is the improv snob.
But speaking of flow, one of the things I really loved about this was the flow of the album. It had a very natural progression, and it sort of, it started from like, you know, this place of, you know, midlife crisis and podcasting and scaring the petites and all of that, that stuff. And then it sort of crescendoed and then ended in like material about death and the horribleness of humanity, but it still felt like it ended on like that hardwood joke. It still felt like it ended on a good bang. Like it still felt good at the end. And I thought that was really impressive to that flow.
Absolutely. And to talk about those subjects and not get like, as the listener, like,
yeah,
this is the practice. I'm like, Deb, you are an inspiring woman. Like, it's been a long time. Like, and I was so grateful that you asked me to be on this, and like, it forced me to check out a stand-up album. Like, you're inundated with however many Netflix specials there are. And then like on my Facebook, like it's reels after reels of oftentimes the same people. And I still can't remember their names, 'cause I was like, oh, there's some that I've like, you know, my eyes have been on that for more than 10 seconds. So I'm like, oh, maybe I'll go and find who that person was. Never saved a video, didn't have a name. So I'm like, who the hell? Anyway, but it was, a treat, like you said in the beginning of the podcast, to hear an older woman's voice. 'Cause there was also a comfort there. If I can say that, like, I don't know if Deb would like that, but it's motherly. So, but maybe she will, because she did do that one bit of her being like, oh my God, I did it. I was one of those older women out in public talking to a stranger about how they should appreciate those times where their kids are just pissing them off. And like, oh, he's just humping beside me. Oh God, stop, Ruby.
That is 100% my mom. Heather will go shopping with her, and my mom will come back and like talk about how she got into this big conversation about death with this woman in the checkout line. And I'm like,
but isn't that cool?
It's one of those things that I'm like, it makes her happy. And
yes,
when she does it, it never feels like she engages in a way that the person seems to want to talk. But I was like, how do you do that? Like, I can't talk
Matt,
to randos.
It's an art. I can and I do. I am my father's daughter. He'll go to a bar and just talk to anybody. And I'm the person at the concert that's like, that's a really cool hat. Where'd you get it? It was literally Wes and I went to go see Paul Langlois of the Tragically Hit has his own Paul Langlois band. And we saw them at the concert hall maybe a month ago. And we're talking to this guy in the audience, or I am, because I was like, I've had some drinks. I'm chatty naturally. And then like catch me at the right time after a couple drinks. And I'm like, I won't let you go. No, I do know when to go. I am aware. But this one guy had a really great hat. And Wes has been in the place of like, I'm 34 going on 35. And I don't know if I can wear baseball caps my whole 30s into my 40s. Mm-hmm. Like, what hat do I graduate to? Is it the paperboy cap? And he's like that guy over there, look at his hat. I'm like, let's go talk to him. And so then we go talk to him and I'm like, where'd you get your hat? And he tells me, it was like somewhere in Florida, I think, to bring it back to Florida. But he was with his wife who passed away. And then we got into this whole talk and not that I cried, because like once that comes up, you're like, is it an exit or is it, you know, does somebody want
like
to talk about it?
Transition. Yeah. My sister's the same way. Like she and my mom and you are natural at, for me, I'm just like, I'm feeling uncomfortable the entire time. She's like, I'm going to seem like a creep or a weirdo if I talk to you kind of thing. Like that's just my resting fear state kind of thing. So because so many men suck and so many of us are creeps and weirdos. So
true, but there's always an opportunity to be proven or prove that theory wrong. Right.
Yes.
And and as someone who knows you and is, I like to think I can read vibes. You know, like, you know immediately if someone is creep, 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 bye. You could never. You're miles away. Light years.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. So, I appreciate that.
If you do feel the urge to chit-chat, Matt.
I will. In real life, in the open air. We'll see how that plays out.
No, well, Heather's got it.
Yeah. If people wanted to find you online, where could they look?
Okay, that's a great question. So bigchickenergysketch.com is our go-to website. And from there, you've got Instagram, which is like the one social media thing that I use. And I recently changed my viewing profile thing to private. So you actually can't find me there. That's only because I started a new job. And then they were like, you know, with like posts and stuff, make sure it's not too political. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Really? But then I also understand it, because then like if a client checks you out and then you're like, but at the same time, do I want to, you know, I was just had some moral back and forths.
It's hard.
Whole,
it's hard.
The topic.
Yeah. Yeah. I all of my social media is friends only. And I'm very selective about what coworkers I add as friends. Nothing against my coworkers. It's just work life and outside work life are different pools, and it's, you know,
absolutely. But Instagram is where I share a lot of the big chick stuff. So there's also the Big Chick Energy Instagram, which is wide open.
and what date is the Hamilton Fringe shows?
Okay, that is an even better question that I'm prepared to answer. It is the third weekend in July. So I'm just double checking my dates so I don't mess this up. My golden opportunity to promote some show. Okay. We've got a show on the 20th. God, I don't even have times, do I? What a calendar. Oh, we've got a show at 3 o'clock on Saturday, July 20th. We've got a show. Why am I going backwards? Oh, Lordy Lou, Matt, this is, you're going to have to edit. Okay. Then we've got one 6:30 to 7 o'clock on Sunday, July 21st. And even the following weekend at on Saturday at 7 PM. And this is at the Staircase Theater on Dundurn Street North.
Awesome. So if you're in the GTA, I can't recommend them highly enough. Big Chick Energy, this is Lisa Carrick. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Comedy Album Book Club, a Far From Here comedy and showbizmonkeys.com co-production. Music today was performed and produced by Glenn Bouchamp, Tim Matthews, Edith Falkenberg, and Jim Spruill, also known as the Something Something Quartet. Remember to check out Mind Magic, link in the description. Thanks for listening and tune in next week to Comedy Album Book Club.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.